We read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, Text 17. Please repeat. Shrinvatam
Shrinvatam
Swakata
Swakata
Krishna
Krishna
Punya
Punya
Shravana
Shravana
Kirtana
Kirtana
Hridiyanta
Hridiyanta
Sta
Sta
Hi
Hi
Abhadrani
Abhadrani
Vidunoti
Vidunoti
Surit
Surit
Satam
Satam
Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna
Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna
Punya Shravana Kirtana
Punya Shravana Kirtana
Hridiyanta Stohya Bhadrani
Hridiyanta Stohya Bhadrani
Vidunoti Surit Satam
Vidunoti Surit Satam
Shrinvatam
Shrinvatam
Those who have developed the urge to hear the message of.
Those who have developed the urge to hear the message of.
Svakata.
Svakata.
His own words.
His own words.
Krishna.
Krishna.
The personality of Godhead.
The personality of Godhead.
Punya.
Punya.
Virtues.
Virtues.
Shravana,
Shravana,
hearing,
hearing,
Kirtana,
Kirtana,
chanting,
chanting,
Hridiyantasta,
Hridiyantasta,
within one's heart,
within one's heart,
he,
he,
certainly,
certainly,
Abhadrani,
Abhadrani.
Desire to enjoy matter.
Desire to enjoy matter.
Vidunoti.
Vidunoti.
Cleanses.
Cleanses.
Surit.
Surit.
Benefactor.
Benefactor.
Satam.
Satam.
Of the truthful.
Of the truthful.
Translation. Sri Krishna. The personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, Super Soul, in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous, when properly heard and chanted. Please repeat. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead.
Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead.
Who is the Paramatma?
Who is the Paramatma?
Super Soul.
Super Soul.
In everyone's heart.
In everyone's heart.
And the benefactor of the truthful devotee.
The benefactor of the truthful devotee.
Cleanses desire for material enjoyment.
Cleanses desire for material enjoyment.
From the heart of the devotee.
From the heart of the devotee.
Who has developed the urge to hear his messages.
Who has developed the urge to hear his messages.
Which are in themselves virtuous.
Which are in themselves virtuous.
When properly heard and chanted.
When properly heard and chanted.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Messages of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, are none different from him. Whenever, therefore, offenseless hearing and glorification of God are undertaken. It is to be understood that Lord Krishna is present there in the form of transcendental sound, which is as powerful as the Lord personally. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshastika, declares clearly that the holy name of the Lord has all the potencies of the Lord, and that he has endowed his innumerable names with the same potency. There is no rigid fixture of time, and anyone can chant the holy name with attention and reverence at his convenience. The Lord is so kind to us that he can be present before us personally in the form of transcendental sound. But unfortunately, we have no taste for hearing and glorifying the Lord's name and activities. We have already discussed developing a taste for hearing and chanting the holy sound. It is done. Now the sentence explains how it is done, how we develop taste for hearing and chanting. That was the subject of last night's verse. What is the method by which we develop taste for hearing and chanting? Can anyone say? Yes.
Sublimation, sublimation to him. I mean, Purn Sharnagat, is what we say in Hindi.
It is done through the medium of service to the pure devotee of the Lord. The Lord is reciprocally respondent to his devotees. When he sees that a devotee is completely sincere in getting admittance to the transcendental service of the Lord and has thus become eager to hear about him, the Lord acts from within the devotee in such a way that the devotee may easily go back to him. The Lord is more anxious to take us back into his kingdom than we can desire. Most of us do not desire at all to go back to Godhead. Only a very few men want to go back to Godhead. But anyone who desires to go back to Godhead, Sri Krishna helps in all respects. So, the Upanishads explain that the Jivatma, the individual soul, and the Paramatma, the supreme soul, are situated in the same body, like two birds on a branch of the same tree. One bird, the Jivatma, is busy trying to enjoy the fruits on the tree. He's pecking at the fruits on the tree, and some are sweet and some are bitter, and thus he enjoys and suffers. And the other bird, the Paramatma, who is actually the best friend of the living entity, is witnessing his friend's engagement in fruitive work, witnessing his friend's suffering of pious and sinful reactions, and waiting for the time that his friend will turn his face toward him. when the living entity somehow or other, by good fortune, comes into the association of a pure devotee and engages in the service of a pure devotee, he gradually acquires the qualities of the pure devotee. And the foremost quality of the pure devotee is attraction for hearing and chanting the holy name and glories of the Lord. And when, after selfless service to the pure devotee, the living entity becomes eager to hear about the Lord, then the Lord within the heart helps him. The Lord is more eager to get us back home, back to Godhead, than we can desire, as Srila Prabhupada says. He is more eager to get us back home, back to Godhead, than we are to go. In fact, very few really do want to go back to Godhead. They're religious, but they want to enjoy in the material world. They want to be happy in the material world. So when someone is really serious about going back home, back to Godhead, and is eager to hear the messages of Godhead, then the Lord, from within the heart, helps him by cleansing the desire for material enjoyment. There are many important words in this verse, but one important phrase is sulit satam. Satam in a general sense is translated as devotee. But here Srila Prabhupada says truthful devotee. Sat also means truth. Truthful devotee. Truthful devotee means that he's completely sincere. In other words, he's not duplicitous. A duplicitous person will show himself to be one thing, but inside he's something else. He'll show that he's interested in doing service, but he actually wants to enjoy. Of course, it may be that someone sincerely wants to serve, but is burdened by material desires. The person may actually be sincere, but he's just burdened by material desires. And that person, if he continues serving the pure devotee and hearing the messages of Godhead, he will also gradually be purified. But there are also duplicitous people. Like Ravana, he dressed as a sannyasi. He came to the hermitage of Lord Ram when Ram was away. He dressed as a sannyasi to take advantage of the culture of respect for sannyasis, but he was not a sannyasi at all. His purpose was to enjoy Sita Devi. So many examples. But the idea is surit satam. We should be truthful. We should be completely sincere. And if we're completely sincere, then we will accept whatever mercy the Lord gives us. We won't place any conditions. Sometimes a devotee may be sincere, but he may have some material attachment. And then the Lord, to help the devotee, will take away the attachment. And the devotee will accept it as the Lord's mercy. If someone's not completely sincere, then he may try to get back what the Lord took away from him. Leave the Lord for the thing that the Lord took away from him. But one who's sincere, he will stay with the Lord no matter what happens. He'll stay with the process of Krishna consciousness, the process of chanting and hearing. Srila Prabhupada has spoken about the function of Maya. Maya Devi is also a devotee of Krishna. But Maya Devi's function, especially in the beginning, is to test a new person. She'll test a new person by putting obstacles. To see, is this person really coming to serve Krishna? Or is this person coming to disturb Krishna with material demands? So she'll test the devotee by presenting so many obstacles, and if the devotee is sincere, then even in spite of the obstacles, he or she will continue with the process of devotional service. But if the person has really come with material desires, you know, to disturb Krishna, then when there are obstacles, the person may leave. Krishna didn't help me. I'm going to Shiva. I'm going to Hanuman. I'm going to Ganesh. I'm going to Satya Sai Baba. I want someone who will help me. So, as Srila Prabhupada said, you know, one who's sincere will get a sincere guru. If one is insincere, he'll get an insincere guru. If someone wants Krishna, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach, Krishna will lead him to a person who will give him Krishna, will teach him the science of how to attain Krishna. And if one is materialistic or duplicitous, one is insincere, then one will get a guru who's insincere. Because Krishna is in the heart as the super soul, and he knows the desire of the living entity. So it's a very although we preach because we want everyone to take to Krishna consciousness for their own benefit, but not everyone will take. We can't expect that everyone will take. But still, we have to do our best. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Jatayu, the bird, a devotee of Lord Ramachandra. When Ravana came to kidnap Sita, Jatayu saw him, carrying her away. Jatayu was quite old at the time, but still he saw, Ravana's kidnapping Sita, I was trying to save her. So he challenged Ravana, but because Ravana was so powerful, Ravana defeated him, and he carried on his way with Sita. But when Lord Ramchandra was passing through the forest and he came upon Jatayu, he saw that Jatayu had given his life for his service. That was not consequential, whether he was successful or not. What was significant was that he gave his life for the service of Lord Ramchandra, and Lord Ramchandra personally conducted his funeral rites, just like the son does for the father. Srila Prabhupada used this example to make the point that when we preach, we may not be successful in the external sense in all cases. But the fact that we've made our best effort, the fact that we've given our life in the service of the Lord to bring people back to Him, that will please the Lord. And that is our success. Bhakti means to please the Lord, to please the Master. And the Lord will be pleased. His Holiness Indradumya Swami told a story when we were together in San Diego last Sunday. In his youth, he liked to surf. I think his class was really very appropriate for the San Diego audience. So he described that in his youth he liked to surf, and he went to one place in Mexico where there was a 1 mile long wave. What's a riptide? Anyone know what a riptide is? Not this group. San Diego, we probably would have had 50 hands go up. But anyway, something like that. And so, Maharaj, he was young, he was a strong swimmer. He'd also been trained as a lifeguard. So he, swam way out to catch this, mile-long wave and ride it in. But as he was coming in towards the shore, he saw a group of people, Mexicans, motioning and screaming and hollering and crying. And he realized that a loved one of theirs had been pulled under the current. And so Maharaj looked and he saw there was actually a body of a young girl of about 12 years of age. And being a strong swimmer and trained as a lifeguard. He swam to get her. And she was blue in color. It looked as if she was dead, but actually she wasn't dead. She was still alive. There were signs that she was still alive. So he took hold of her, you know, as he was trained as a lifeguard, and carried her to shore. And then when he got her to the dry land, he gave her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to bring her back to life. But actually, she was already dead. Although when he initially reached her, she was still alive. There were symptoms of life, but by the time he got her to the shore, she was dead. But still, he went through the motions of trying to revive her for the sake of all the family and friends. It would have just been too, like, heart-shattering. So, you know, he went through the motions, but within his heart, he knew that she was gone, and then ultimately, I think they even called for an ambulance, for a medic, and then they came and pronounced her dead. So Maharaj told the story that we have to make the effort. We may not be successful every time, but we have to make the effort. And when we make the effort, Krishna is pleased. So we shouldn't be so concerned. Yes, we want people to take to Krishna consciousness, but we shouldn't be so concerned that every effort will be successful. It may be or it may not be. But our success is in the effort to bring people to Krishna. And the effort will please Krishna. Of course, when you do that, as Prabhupada said, preaching means taking risks. When you do that, you put yourself out on the line. You know, you open your heart to people, but they may not accept you. Or they may temporarily, but then after some time, you know, being tested by Maya, they may turn away. This is the most confidential service to Krishna, because that's what Krishna wants more than anything else. He wants his lost children to come back home. Srila Prabhupada sometimes told the story, well, in India he would give the example of Mr. Birla, because he was the richest man in India at the time, the richest family. That suppose Mr. Birla's grandson runs away from home. He has some misunderstanding with his father. He runs away from home. And you see the boy on the street begging. So you could give him a few rupees so he can buy some food. You can do something to give him some temporary relief of his miserable condition. But that is not the best service. The best service is to say, my dear boy, you are Mr. Birla's grandson. I know you. I know him. What happened? Tell me what happened. And come with me. I'll take you back to your home. And then when he goes back home, and is reconciled with his father or reinstated in his original position, then all of his problems are solved. He doesn't have to worry about food, he doesn't have to worry about clothing, he doesn't have to worry about shelter, he doesn't have to worry about anything. All of his problems are solved. So in the same way, all of us have run away from our eternal home with Krishna. And we're loitering in the material world, begging, undergoing the hard struggle for existence. But we don't have to. If we go back home, back to Godhead, everything's provided. We don't have to struggle. Everything is provided. So, to do welfare work on the material platform may be somewhat beneficial, temporarily, at best. But to bring someone back to his Supreme Father, to his original home, that's the best service to the Father, that's the best service to the son or daughter, that's the permanent solution to all problems. So Srila Prabhupada said our work is like that, trying to pick up people who are loitering on the street in the material world and bring them back to their original home, back to their Supreme Father. And that is such an important service and such a confidential service that Krishna blesses the preacher. Regardless of how successful or not he may be in the external sense, but he blesses the preacher because he made the effort. He gave his life for the mission of reclaiming the fallen souls. And there will be sincere souls who will come forward and who will take to the process. And Krishna will help because he wants them to come back home, back to God. But we have to make the effort, and the candidate also has to make the effort. Once one man in Bombay came to meet Srila Prabhupada. At the time, Prabhupada was actually staying at a Ram Mandir in Chembur before we had our own place. So the man came and said, "Swamiji, Swamiji, please save me, please save me. Only you can save me, please save me." And Srila Prabhupada said, "I cannot save you. You have to save yourself. But I can give you the method by which you can save yourself." So that's the duty of the preacher. He gives the method, but the candidate also has to take up the process. And if he does, sincerely, the Lord within the heart will help him. One cannot enter into the kingdom of God unless one is perfectly cleared of all sins. The material sins are products of our desires to lord it over material nature. If one is engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, gradually he realizes his real position. By the grace of God, such a devotee gets sufficient strength to defend himself from the state of disturbances, and gradually all disturbing elements are eliminated from his mind. So Srinivatam, those who have developed the urge to hear the message of Godhead, Swakata, Kata, we know Kata means discussions, and Swa means Krishna, Srinivata, Swakata, Krishna, topics of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says Swakata also means topics of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Mahaprabhu. And there are two types of katha, talks by Krishna, such as the Bhagavad Gita, and talks about Krishna, such as Srimad Bhagavatam. Punya Shravana Kirtana, just by engaging and chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, one becomes pious, or chanting and hearing about the glories of the Lord is itself pious activity. Just sitting and listening like you're doing is a pious activity. It makes one pious. And then the abhadrani. Abhadrani means inauspicious things in the heart, dirty things within the heart, which translates as the desire to enjoy matter. That's a very difficult job, to clear the heart of the desire to enjoy matter. We cannot do it on our own. There's no way we can do it on our own. We need help. And the help comes from the Lord within the heart. He helps us. Sometimes it may happen in spite of our most sincere efforts, we're unable to give up some material desire, some material attachment. Even then, the devotee continues in a happy mood. Continues in a happy mood. Because he will serve Krishna no matter what. The devotee thinks, you know, Krishna may, you know, I am not capable of freeing myself from material attachment or material desire. Only Krishna is capable. I mean, I'm doing my best, but ultimately I depend on the mercy of the Lord. But even if the Lord doesn't immediately remove the material desire, the material attachment, still I will continue to serve him. I will not give up my service to him. And it's up to him. Of course, it shouldn't be taken in a light way. This is really spoken in a mood of deep surrender. Of depending on the Lord, making one's best effort by all means, but at the same time depending on the mercy of the Lord and persevering, you know, even if the results are not immediate, and continuing in a happy mood, because he knows he has his father is looking after him, his father knows what's best for him, and he carries on in a happy mood. Then Sarit Satam. Sarit means well-wisher, benefactor. Satam of the truthful devotee. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Gaur Nataraj Prabhu?
They were talking about piety. Is there a difference between like spiritual piety and material piety, like going back to the heavenly planets?
Yes, there is. That is a very good point. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that there's three kinds of sukriti. One is bhoganmukhi sukriti, that is sukriti or pious activities that lead to material enjoyment, that you're saying going to a heavenly planet. There's mukti and mukha sukriti, that is pious activity that leads to liberation, impersonal liberation. And there's bhakti and mukha sukriti, pious activities that lead to pure devotional service. And the service of pure devotees is bhakti and mukha sukriti. So the pious activity of hearing about Krishna is bhakti and mukha sukriti that leads to devotional service. That's correct. Yes? What is your name?
Ram Pandit.
Ram.
Ram Pandit.
Yes.
Devotee who is in a middle situation, like who is not very advanced, and who is also not kind of very material, is not enjoying material association, as well as he is not confident enough in his devotional life, does he has to suffer more than material or advanced people? So he is in between. His position is worse than material.
Well, let me rephrase your question. Srila Prabhupada did describe the position of Indians to be like a person in the ocean who puts one foot on a raft. You know what a raft is? Like a boat, flat. Puts one foot on a raft of material progress, and he puts the other foot on the raft of spiritual progress. And he can't make any progress. You have to put both feet on one raft. Then you can be saved. And he felt, by and large, Indians weren't really fit for material progress. So they should put both feet on the raft of spiritual advancement. Now your question is, being sort of neither here nor there, do you suffer more than someone who's more advanced? Well, the implication in your question is that that people who are advanced suffer. Where did that come from?
Devotee who is very advanced.
Yeah.
I'm comparing a middle class devotee with material people or with very advanced devotee.
Yeah.
So a person who is in middle class,
yeah,
he has to suffer more than material people as well as advanced people. But advanced people knows the reason for everything. Material people has no reasoning for anything. He just enjoys the material association. But the middle class people, like who has not, middle class devotee who are not completely advanced, he does not like associating with material stuff. As well as he has not more knowledge to understand everything. So I feel the people who are in the middle, he has more pain, he has more suffering. So that's what I was trying to understand, that is it correct?
Well, you're speaking from that position, you should know better. Okay, now let us say you're suffering more. So now what are you going to do? Let us take it for granted you're suffering more. I don't think you are. I actually think the people who are more materialistic are suffering more. They may not be conscious of it because they're in so much ignorance But actually they're suffering more. They're definitely suffering more. Prabhupada gave the example of like a drunk person who's on the footpath. He's like so intoxicated, so much in ignorance. He's cold. He's dirty. He's sick. But if you say, come with me, you know, I'll, you know, clean up and give you clean clothes and give you good food. Say, I'm fine the way I am. Don't disturb me. So the fact that they're complacent is just an indication of their ignorance. It's not really a fact that they're happy. They're suffering, but they're in so much ignorance they're not aware of their suffering. But someone who's sober, someone whose consciousness is more elevated, can see that the person is suffering more. I don't think you're suffering more than the materialist. But you're not enjoying as much as the transcendentalists. I mean, what Prabhupada said is true. You have to put, to make progress, you have to put both feet on one raft. You can't have one in one raft and one in the other raft. But putting both feet on the raft of spiritual progress will lead to eternal happiness. Putting both feet on the boat of material advancement will just take you to hell faster. You'll progress, but you're progressing towards hell. And if you have one foot on each, you're not making any progress. You're just staying where you are. If you have both feet on the raft of Krishna consciousness, then you go back to Godhead. But you don't really need to understand everything. You don't necessarily have to understand everything. If you have faith, you can make progress, and as you make progress, you'll understand more. It's really a matter of faith. But if your faith is weak and you feel you have doubts, you need to understand more before you can go further. It's really not lack of knowledge, it's more lack of faith. Everything depends on faith. Krishna consciousness means the development of faith. That's what Krishna consciousness is. From Shraddha to Prema, it's just increasing faith. Prema is nothing different from Shraddha, but just more mature. So what we really need is faith. And that comes in the association of devotees who have faith. It's good that you're coming. Do you have karmi friends?
I work, so I have many people who are very material.
Yeah.
They sometimes in some of their activity they feel very happy doing that. And I was listening one class and their kind of situation came when it was kind of being spoken that the devotees who are in middle situation they have in fact more suffering. So they should try very hard, they should pray Krishna to grow very fast in Krishna consciousness, and once they go to the other side of the hill, then they start enjoying their spiritual life. Otherwise, in the middle, 3 days going out and 2 days coming to temple, that's the situation where a lot of us, because we feel pain, being into the material people, we see their happiness, but I don't want to, you know, go with all material activities that they do. And they don't want to come with so many things that I do. So there is not proper connection to the environment that we have around us. So unless and until we are not fully convinced in our devotional service, it's a position where, you know, not something where it's not like making, you know, complete. That's what I feel too. That I'm standing somewhere where I'm not sure of so many things, I'm sure of something. That position actually is very, very suffering.
Well, It's really a matter of consciousness. Many devotees, it's not a pleasant situation, but many devotees do work with materialistic people. But it's really a matter of consciousness. Alfred Ford, the great grandson of Henry Ford, he became a devotee. He came with Srila Prabhupada to Bombay wearing, as a brahmachari, wearing saffron as a brahmachari. He was carrying Srila Prabhupada's suitcases from the car. I said, "Who's that new brahmachari? I've never seen him before." So that's Alfred Ford. So he stayed with us for a few weeks in Juhu. And then when he was ready to leave, he wanted to go over his life's program with Srila Prabhupada. And at that time, pretty much everyone who joined, who came to Krishna consciousness, engaged in full-time service in the temple. Hardly anyone, almost no one then, was a devotee and had a job. Everyone did full-time service in the temple. So Srila Prabhupada told, became initiated as Ambarish Das. So Srila Prabhupada told Ambarish Das that when he goes back to Detroit, he should work, because he wanted people in society to know that you can still have a responsible position in the material world and at the same time be a devotee of Krishna. So Ambarish Prabhu asked, do I have to work in the family business, in the Ford Motor Company? Or Prabhu said, no, you can do whatever work you like, but you should do some work. And then Ambarish said, but what about association? What will I do for association when I work? And Srila Prabhupada said, while you're working, if you think, I'm doing this for Krishna, that is your association. So, but then that has to be your purpose. That has to be your purpose. But if that's your purpose, then of course we always prefer the association of devotees, but even in the other association you feel you're there for a purpose. Like sometimes I would go to Pakistan to preach, and I would have to wear like a safari suit or something that was sort of respectable there. And but I was on a mission. I knew I was there for a purpose. So you have the sense of mission, a sense of purpose, then that takes you beyond everything else. So we will pray for you. Yes, Mataji? What is your name? Oh, yes. Okay.
Raja, I wanted to know if as a devotee you have material desires, then should you abstain from indulging in material sense enjoyment altogether? Or should you just wait and serve the devotees and the Lord and just wait for these desires to subside on your own?
Well, yes, you should serve the devotees, but as far as whether you should indulge in them, it would sort of depend on what they are. It would depend on what they are, how harmless or harmful they are. But you should reduce. Gradually reduce. It's like someone who's addicted to smoking cigarettes. Okay, smoke 20 a day. Okay, I'll reduce one a day. But the real key is to be, engaged in spiritual activities that keep you occupied and keep you happy.
But what confuses me is that at times you hear from the senior devotees that if you try and abstain from indulging, if you have certain desires, you force yourself not to indulge into that. Maybe at that moment you will be able to suppress it, but at some time in the future you will again feel that urge. So I was just wondering if it's right or not.
Well, it's the same point. It depends what it is, what the cost of it is. If you're talking about ice cream, I would say it's okay. If you're talking about a $500,000 house that your husband is going to have to slave for day and night, I would give it a second thought. Yes?
Does offensive chanting increase material desires?
I think we need to be clear about what offensive chanting is.
Like inattentive chanting. Chanting and harboring, not making an attempt to improve, just chant, going through the motion, chanting and not making an attempt to give up material desires, not making a sincere attempt, but just going on chanting,
But why are you chanting?
Peer pressure? Being
Well, why are you submitting yourself to this peer pressure?
No, but my question is, does that happen?
No, I understand your question, but I'm trying to go deeper here. Why are you chanting? Why are you chanting?
I should give up chanting.
Sorry?
Because I when I was, many years ago, I was a brahmachari, and I was a brahmachari wearing saffron robes. I had to chant, but I had all these material desires, and then I gave up chanting, and then this material desires came like storm, and then, I was just wondering, I read somewhere that if you chant, then later on I read somewhere that if one chants inattentively, and things like that, and it's like words. I could be, I may have misunderstood what I read.
I don't think that, sometimes it's said like that, but I think chanting helps. From what you said, your material desires became worse when you stopped chanting. But chanting helps. There are different statements like that, but Prabhupada's mood, and I feel most comfortable with his presentation of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada's mood is just keep chanting, and eventually everything will come right. Yes, Rohit?
Maharaj, when we're preaching, you said Krishna likes when duty preaches.
Yeah.
But how do you feel obstacles that come on for the preaching? Are they tests?
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada says that the material world is so constituted that when we preach there will be opposition. It's just the way that the world is. And we have to tolerate it. That's also why the preacher is so dear to Krishna, because he does tolerate. He does face opposition. Prabhupada said big preaching means big enemies.
even if it's very dear to Krishna. And Krishna likes those thoughts of preaching to devotees, to get more devotees and control of everything.
Yeah, but Prabhupada said that your service is to follow the order of Krishna, to please Krishna. Yes, Krishna was Arjuna's friend. He was sitting on the same chariot with Arjuna. But Krishna never said, okay, Arjuna, I'm your friend, now you relax and sit back, and I'll kill the enemy. And when it's all over, I'll wake you up. Krishna said, you fight. So the same applies to preaching. The same applies to any service. We have to fight for Krishna and depend on him. But not that, oh, Krishna wants it. Krishna wants the fallen souls to come back, to home, back to Godhead. So let him bring them back to Godhead. Meanwhile, I'll eat and sleep. Yes. Come on.
The harder I try to control the mind during chanting, the harder the more harder it is to control it. You were here 3-6 months ago during the Japa workshop when you spoke about chanting with passion, chanting with feeling, things like that. I'm sitting in one place, I can chant, but the mind is just going all over the world. And I try to bring it back, and then it goes again. I bring it back, it goes again. Is that offensive chanting? I mean, it is. But how can I control it? How can I improve it?
Yeah. Well, there's two approaches. Of course, getting into a battle with your mind is not a good approach. When we say bring the mind back, we mean gently bring it back. So if you like come into a confrontation with your mind, then it's like Kurukshetra war going on, and you won't win. You won't win. So it's, you gently bring it back. There is a verse, I also thought of it in relation to the other question about indulgence. And that says that the expert chariot driver will gradually rein in the horses. If he tries to pull in the horses too quickly or too abruptly, they'll rear up and rebel. So he sort of knows how much slack to allow and when to rein them in, and so that they don't rear up and rebel. So it is a delicate process. And the other way is to tolerate and pray. You know, it's like just tolerate and keep chanting and pray to the Holy Name for mercy, pray to Haridas Thakur, pray to Srila Prabhupada, pray to your spiritual master. It's like that. Do you have Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yes.
11th canto, chapter 20. Service. Okay, here's that verse that I mentioned. This is so relevant, so relevant. It's actually two verses. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 26, Your Devotional Service, Texts 27 and 28. Jata Shraddho Matkatasu Nirvina Sarva Karmasu Veda Dukat Makan Kaman Parityage Pyanishwara Tito Bhajeta Mam Prita Shraddha Lordrida Nischaya Jushamanas Chitan Kaman Duko Darkams Chagarayam. Having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. Purport. The beginning stage of pure devotional service is described here by the Lord. A sincere devotee has practically seen that all material activities lead only to sense gratification, and all sense gratification leads only to misery. Thus, a devotee's sincere desire is to engage 24 hours a day in the loving service of Lord Krishna without any personal motivation. The devotee sincerely desires to be established in his constitutional position as the Lord's eternal servitor. And he prays to the Lord to elevate him to this exalted position. The word Anishwar indicates that because of his past sinful activities and bad habits, one may not immediately be able to completely extinguish the enjoying spirit. The Lord here encourages a devotee not to be overly depressed or morose, but to remain enthusiastic and to go on with his loving service. The word Nirvina indicates that a sincere devotee, although somewhat entangled in the remnants of sense gratification, is completely disgusted with material life and under no circumstances willingly commits sinful activities. In fact, he avoids every kind of materialistic activity. The word kaman basically refers to sex attraction and its byproducts in the form of children, home, and so forth. Within the material world, the sex impulse is so strong that even a sincere candidate in the loving service of the Lord may sometimes be disturbed by sex attraction or by lingering sentiments for wife and children. A pure devotee certainly feels spiritual affection for all living entities, including the so-called wife and children. But he knows that material bodily attraction leads to no good, for it simply entangles one and one's so-called relatives in a miserable chain reaction of fruitive activities. This is an important point because most of us here are householders. and that is that a devotee feels spiritual affection for all living entities, that he wants to help all living entities in Krishna consciousness. So that sense of spiritual affection and spiritual care will extend to one's family members. But if because of one's past conditioning, past sinful activities, past bad habits, one engages them in sense gratification, then he should sincerely regret his activities, because he knows that ultimately sense gratification will lead to a miserable result, both for him and his family members. So it's not, that's the point here. It doesn't mean that we don't have spiritual affection for our family members, but we don't engage them in material sense gratification. The word dridha nischaya, steadfast conviction, indicates that in any circumstance a devotee is completely determined to go on with his prescribed duties for Krishna. Thus, he thinks, by my previous shameful life, my heart is polluted with many illusory attachments. Personally, I have no power to stop them. Only Lord Krishna within my heart can remove such inauspicious contamination. This is what we read, Vidu Noti Saritsitam. But whether the Lord removes such attachments immediately or lets me go on being afflicted by them, I will never give up my devotional service to him. Even if the Lord places millions of obstacles in my path, Rohit, are you listening? Even if the Lord places millions of obstacles in my path, and even if because of my offenses I go to hell, I will never for a moment stop serving Lord Krishna. I'm not interested in mental speculation and fruitive activities. Even if Lord Brahma personally comes before me, offering such engagements, I will not be even slightly interested. Although I am attached to material things, I can see very clearly that they lead me to no good, because they simply give me trouble and disturb my devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, I sincerely repent my foolish attachments to so many material things, and I am patiently awaiting Lord Krishna's mercy. You should read this, read it and reread it and reread it, because it really gives us the guidance how to deal with, you know, the uncontrolled mind and senses, the materially attached mind and senses. The word prita indicates that a devotee feels exactly like the son or subject of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is very attached to his relationship with the Lord. It's really very touching and intimate and beautiful, even for a devotee who's struggling. Therefore, although sincerely lamenting occasional lapses into sense enjoyment, he never gives up his enthusiasm to serve Lord Krishna. If a devotee becomes too morose or too discouraged in devotional service, he may drift into an impersonal consciousness or give up his devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, The Lord here advises that although one should sincerely repent, he should not become chronically depressed. One should understand that because of his past sins, he must occasionally suffer disturbances from the material mind and senses. But one should not therefore become a devotee of detachment, as do the speculative philosophers. Although one may desire detachment to purify one's devotional service to the Lord, if one becomes more concerned with renunciation than with acting for the pleasure of Lord Krishna, he is misunderstanding the position of loving devotional service. You follow? If one becomes too preoccupied that, no, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do this, then he's missing the point, which is to enthusiastically engage in devotional service to Lord Krishna. One becomes more concerned with negation, like the impersonal philosophers, than with devotional service. Faith in Lord Krishna. Faith in Lord Krishna is so powerful that in due course of time it will automatically award detachment and perfect knowledge. If one gives up Lord Krishna as the central object of one's worship and concentrates more on knowledge and detachment, one will become deviated from one's progress in going back home, back to Godhead. A sincere devotee of the Lord must be sincerely convinced that simply by the strength of devotional service and the mercy of Lord Krishna, he will achieve everything auspicious in life. One must believe that Lord Krishna is all merciful and that he is the only real goal of one's life. Such determined faith, combined with a sincere desire to give up sense enjoyment, will carry one past the obstacles of this world. The words Jata Shraddha Matkatasu are most significant here. By faithful hearing of the mercy and glories of the Lord, one will gradually be freed from all material desire and clearly see at every moment the utter frustration of sense gratification. Chanting the glories of the Lord with firm faith and conviction is a tremendously powerful spiritual process that enables one to give up all material association. There is actually nothing inauspicious in the devotional service of the Lord. Occasional difficulties experienced by a devotee are due to his previous material activities. On the other hand, the endeavor for sense gratification is completely inauspicious. Thus, sense gratification and devotional service are directly opposed to each other. In all circumstances, one should therefore remain the Lord's sincere servant, always believing in his mercy. Then one will certainly go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Yes, Shukantala? Yes, Angelica.
Yes.
arrange our lives, given our absolute part in arranging our lives to preach? Or should we allow Krishna to provide this opportunity? And then the other part of my question was, what if we also qualify to teach?
Well, that is a good question. That is a good question. To preach, you have to be able to speak in a proper way. So that is the first question. But that should be judged by others, because feeling unqualified, even Rupa Goswami felt that he was unqualified. But in spite of being unqualified or feeling unqualified, he offered himself as an instrument in the hands of the previous acharyas. So one should never feel qualified, but one should have the qualification of regularly chanting the holy name, following the regulative principles, and being able to repeat the message of Krishna. If one has that qualification, one can preach. As far as making an effort, you should make an effort. Otherwise, it's a little like, okay, Krishna, you want the souls to go back to Godhead, you bring them to me and I'll speak to them. But at the same time, you know, to some extent, how much time and energy one has does depend on one's position in life, one's responsibility. And one cannot neglect one's duties, you know, as a mother, as a provider. So one does have to discharge those duties as well in the spirit of Krishna consciousness. But beyond that, if one does have time and energy, should look for an opportunity, or like if you're at the temple, someone comes, you can approach them. You know, how much of an effort you make will really depend on how much time and energy you can afford. I know in San Jose, Vaisheshika Prabhu really mobilizes his congregation in book distribution. I mean, it's amazing what they do there, how he inspires them in spite of their other duties and responsibilities. It's very powerful. Yes?
Just continuing the same question again. What if we don't have the time and energy, but the desire is there?
Rohit, can you answer that one?
Yes, I'm honest.
I answered the same question last night when you asked. How much time do you spend eating and sleeping? No. But it's good you have the desire. That is good that you have the desire. And it may actually be that circumstantially you don't have the time and energy. But you should keep that desire and pray. Pray for some mercy that you'll be able to serve as you want, preach as you want. It can be like that.
Yeah.
be like that.
This might sound very stupid, but when it's like sometimes I feel desperate when praying for something, I mean, regarding about something like trying to advance in consciousness or trying to give up some other thoughts or get rid of the positive or whatever. Sometimes I get so desperate that when praying I kind of start clinging to like Prabhupada and other acharyas and Siddhartha Mahaprabhu Krishna all together, kind of looking back and forth. Is that something that is okay? Or,
yeah, if you're desperate. You have to do whatever you can. But it really depends on the depth of sincerity. It depends on the depth of sincerity. Vasudev Datta told Lord Chaitanya that, you know, I'm ready to take the sinful reactions of all the living entities in the whole universe on me. You know, let them all go back to Godhead and let me stay and suffer. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that, his body began to tremble, his eyes welled up with tears, and he embraced Vasudev Datta because that was a sincere prayer. I mean, I don't come between husbands and wives, but I gave a class once in Surat, and one lady said like that, let me suffer all the sinful reactions, let everyone go back to Godhead. And her husband said, you know, how sincere is that prayer? You know. But I think that if you're really sincere about wanting to preach, Krishna will help. Krishna will help. Prabhupada's spiritual master asked him to preach. But he felt because of his circumstances he was unable to preach immediately. But he said he always kept that instruction in his heart, and he was waiting for the time when he could execute it. Yeah, that's nice actually. Next on the program? Prasad? Oh yes, what is your name?
Lalita.
Shri Lalita.
Because I surrendered unto him and I wasn't sincere. If I was sincere,
evidence I have done, what I have done. So I somehow, is there a concept of re-surrender, or is there any way that he can forgive us? I'm lost there. So how can we overcome that?
You say that you surrendered to Krishna.
That's not true because we haven't really, because we've...
No, but you're... I'm not convinced that you haven't surrendered to Krishna. The fact that you become angry in certain circumstances to me does not prove that you have not surrendered to Krishna. Surrender means that you, of course, there's those six divisions, anukulyasya sankalpa, patikulyasya varjana, accept whatever is favorable, reject what's unfavorable, gopchitrej varanam tita, accept Krishna as your maintainer and protector, have no desires independent of Krishna, understanding that your desires can be fulfilled only by Krishna's mercy, humility, and atma sankshepa, self-surrender. So those are the divisions, but the basic understanding of surrender is that you accept Krishna as your superior and agree to do whatever he says. Like you're having there's a war, and one side is overwhelmed by the other side, and they surrender. Unconditional surrender. Whatever you tell us to do, we'll do. So that's the first point, surrender. Now, the other questions like, what does Krishna want you to do? How do you know what Krishna wants you to do? That's the next point. But are we clear on surrender? So do you accept the principle of surrender to do whatever Krishna wants you to do? All right. Then how do you know what Krishna wants you to do? We have sadhu, shastra, and guru. They tell us what Krishna wants. The central point is shastra. Sadhu lives according to shastra. He repeats the message of shastra. Guru the same. He lives according to shastra and teaches his disciples the knowledge of shastra, engages them in the service of Krishna according to shastra. So that's how you know. As far as not getting angry, it's not necessarily so that anger is against the mood of surrender. In the beginning, Arjuna refused to fight. But Krishna wanted him to fight. And Srila Prabhupada said that in order to fight and kill, you have to become angry. So Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita just to make Arjuna angry. So it depends on whether the anger is material or spiritual, whether the anger is based on frustration of sense gratification, or whether it's based on, you know, some impediment to Krishna's service. But even if there is some anger due to false ego, you tolerate it. Being surrendered is the beginning. It doesn't mean you're perfect. But as we've been discussing, you tolerate and you continue and pray to Krishna for his mercy to help you. The first sentence of this purport is that this, you know, this is the beginning stage of pure devotional service. This is pure devotional service. It's pure devotional service because the devotee will not engage in any other activity besides devotional service. He won't engage in karma, jnana, yoga, tapasya, or anything other than devotional service. Even though he's still troubled by occasional lapses into sense gratification. But this is considered the beginning of pure devotional service because he continues in devotional service no matter what. He will not give up his devotional service to Krishna for anything. So an occasional lapse into sense gratification, you know, getting angry when you shouldn't, you tolerate it, you pray to Krishna, you repent, you may beg for forgiveness from the person that you might have offended, and you go on in your devotional service. You don't become too preoccupied with your occasional lapses into sense gratification, but you go on. That is surrender. Not that you're perfect, but in spite of imperfections, in spite of obstacles, in spite of delays, you go on enthusiastically in a happy mood. Dr. Ritchie?
I heard an excerpt from one of the classes all this Radhanath Swami gave, Rasmash Prabhu read it to me. He says that to the degree that we're happy in Krishna consciousness, to that degree we make advancement. So I was wondering if, like, following the discussion that we've had tonight, does that mean that we have to somehow find happiness in our unhappiness?
Well, how about finding happiness in Krishna's happiness? I mean, there is some truth to what you said in this sense. I'm not sure if that's what you meant, but in this sense, the last verse of the Shikshastika, Ashusriva Padaratopi Nashtu Mama Darshana Mama Hatam Kurotuva. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radharani is praying, you know, even if you handle me roughly by your embrace, or make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, still you are always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And in that mood of Srimati Radharani, the mood of Srimati Radharani is that if my unhappiness, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing, if my unhappiness gives Krishna happiness, in other words, if Krishna, of course this is in a very high level of Madhurya Ras, but if Krishna wants the company of some other woman, I will go to that other woman and beg her to go to Krishna. And if my unhappiness in that sense of not being with Krishna gives Krishna happiness, then I will consider that unhappiness to be my greatest happiness. But this is actually a very high expression of it. It's a high expression of it. I think maybe in more human terms, Srila Prabhupada said that he likes it most when he sees his disciples struggling. Struggling to make advancements, struggling to preach. So yes, in that sense. Although externally there's struggle, but internally there's happiness. Because Guru and Krishna are pleased. I found that many times in India, that sometimes when I was the most miserable externally, internally I was the most blissful. Like once, I'd gone very far north in Calcutta, and there was a very heavy rainstorm. And at least then there was no sewage system in Calcutta, in a lot of the parts, and in some places there was some system, but not very adequate. So what was happening was the roads were just filling up with water. The water was just getting deeper and deeper. And there were no taxis. I mean, it's like that. The taxi drivers, rickshaw drivers, they don't bother too much. If it's rain, they just pull down the the shade and take rest. And so there's, you know, as way north Calcutta, that I was getting soaked in the rain. The water was getting higher and higher. There's no rickshaws, no taxis. But internally I was very blissful because the only reason I was there was to serve Srila Prabhupada. It was like so obvious that I wouldn't be there for any other reason. There was another time, I forget where it was, some town somewhere. Like late at night, I had to send a telegram to Srila Prabhupada, so I went to the telegraph office. It was like really hot, really hot and humid. Furthermore, that office was filled with flies. And furthermore, there's a very long line of people standing in queue to get to the window. Furthermore, it was very hard to figure out which form to use. There were so many different forms. And then it was hard to get a pen that wrote. It was like from every point of view, it was just really, really difficult. And it was just so hot and humid, and so late, but still hot and humid. But it was the same thing. It's like, I was feeling, why am I here? I'm here to serve Srila Prabhupada. If it weren't to serve Srila Prabhupada, I wouldn't be here. It was like very obvious that I wasn't there for my sense gratification. And that thought that I was there for Srila Prabhupada, I was on a mission for Srila Prabhupada, that gave me great bliss. So sometimes it's like that when the conditions are most, you know, uncomfortable externally, internally one can feel very blissful because one, it's just very clear that one is there for the service of one's spiritual master. One's not there for any reason. It's Sanskrit. Sometimes the experience might be miserable in the immediate sense, but then later you feel the reciprocation. I would find that often when I met Mayavadis, like real staunch Mayavadis, who would, they would argue, but they would never admit defeat. It would happen. I would not leave. I didn't want them to think that we couldn't answer their challenges. I wanted them to know that we had answers. But they were so stubborn, they would never admit defeat. They would just keep arguing. And in the end, I'd always feel sort of bad because I had to hear so much nonsense. This arguing wasn't pleasant for me. And then also I spent so much time, you know, I think I could have met some sincere soul. Or I could have, you know, gotten back a little earlier, kept to my routine better, kept to my schedule better. So I would end up feeling bad when I took rest. But in the morning I would feel blissful. I'd feel reciprocation from Krishna and Prabhupada. They were pleased that I fought with a Mayavadi, even though it was painful at the time. I would get the reciprocation later. So, like they say, no pain, no gain. But the pain is only external. Internally, one is happy because one knows that one is pleasing Krishna, trying to please Krishna. In that sense, what you said is true. I don't know how you meant it, but it's true. Surrender. Comes back to faith and surrender.